Freiheit ist ein ewiger Kampf. So lautet der Titel einer der Vorträge von Angela Davis während ihres zweiwöchigen Aufenthaltes in Frankfurt. Ihre Freiheit lebt die Akademikerin und Aktivistin zwischen theoretischer Arbeit und praktischem Widerstand. Wer genau ist sie? Hier ein kurzer Einblick.
Angela Davis, 1944 in den USA in schwer rassistischer Zeit in Alabama geboren und aufgewachsen. Seit den 60ern kämpft sie für soziale Gerechtigkeit und forscht zur Ungleichheit aufgrund von Ethnizität, Klasse und Geschlecht. Sie studiert bei James Baldwin und ihrem späteren Doktorvater Herbert Marcuse, der ihr rät, in Frankfurt bei Horkheimer, Habermas und Negt zu studieren. Von 1965 bis 1967 lernt sie dort während der Studentenbewegung Wissenschaft und politische Aktivität zu verknüpfen. Sie kehrt in die USA zurück, weil die schwarze Freiheitsbewegung ein neues Stadium erreicht hat. Davis wird bei der Kommunistischen Partei und der Black Panther Bewegung aktiv und kämpft für die Befreiung des inhaftierten George Jackson. Als schwarze Intellektuelle, Bürgerrechtlerin, Kommunistin und Kriegsgegnerin vereint Davis alles, was dem Establishment verhasst ist. 1970 wird sie unter falscher Beschuldigung wegen Mord, Entführung und Verschwörung angeklagt und zu einer der 10 meistgesuchten Personen des FBI. 2 Jahre lang bleibt Davis in Untersuchungshaft. Eine weltweite Protestbewegung erhebt sich. Das Sozialistische Büro in Frankfurt organisiert einen Angela Davis Solidaritätskongress. Hunderttausende Bürger der ehemaligen DDR senden ihr eine 1 000 000 Rosen für Angela Davis Postkarte ins Gefängnis. Für Davis ist es eine Zeit der Angst, der Einsamkeit und Anstrengung, nicht verrückt zu werden. Denn zeitweise ist sie in der psychiatrischen Abteilung des Gefängnisses eingesperrt. Schlussendlich wird sie in allen Punkten freigesprochen. Sie macht weiter, lehrt, schreibt, engagiert sich. Bis heute ist Davis ein Symbol für den Widerstand schwarzer Menschen weltweit. Sie ist überzeugt davon, dass Rassismus heute in Gestalt verschiedener Formen sozialer Ungleichheit auftritt. In den USA ist die emeritierte Professorin besonders in der Bewegung gegen den sogenannten Gefängnisindustriellen Komplex aktiv.
Angela Davis meets German Activists. Unter diesem Motto sprechen wir jetzt über alltäglichen Rassismus, Racial Profiling und das Thema Flüchtlinge. Im Gespräch Angela Davis und Vertreter und Vertreterinnen der Initiative Schwarze Menschen in Deutschland, Zusammen e.V., Afrika-Kulturprojekte und die Initiative Christi Schwundeck. Mein Name ist Hadija Haruna und ich führe auf Deutsch und Englisch durch das Gespräch, bei dem auch die Initiativen und Vereine vorgestellt werden. Eine der bekanntesten Organisationen in Deutschland, die auf alltäglichen Rassismus gegen schwarze Menschen im Land aufmerksam macht, ist die Initiative Schwarze Menschen in Deutschland, kurz ISD.
Der Verein wurde Mitte der 80er gegründet. Die Geschichte schwarzer Menschen sichtbar machen und die antirassistische Arbeit sind die Hauptfelder der ISD. In seiner Arbeit setzt sich der Verein für die Emanzipation und politische Partizipation schwarzer Menschen ein. Er interveniert bei Fällen von Diskriminierung und Rassismus und bezieht Stellung gegenüber der Öffentlichkeit. Der ISD versteht sich als Interessensvertretung und arbeitet in einem bundesweiten Kontext mit anderen Vereinen und Personen der sogenannten Community zusammen. 2015 wird die sogenannte Jüngere Schwarze Bewegung und der Verein auf 30 Jahre Geschichte zurückblicken.
Jamila Adamu, you are talking on behalf of the ISD. How do black people experience everyday racism in Germany?
First of all, I have to say that the perception of black people in Germany is deeply rooted in racist perspective on black people and people of African descent due to a history not really known to the public and in a way made invisible, inaudible. And so you would find all kind of stereotypes reproduced in the media, but also in children's books, and it would be really difficult for activists to raise the issue of deconstructing these racialized stereotypes.
Ms. Davis, listening to Ms. Adamu's quotes, which comparison do you draw with the U.S.?
Well, of course, there's a familiarity with the specific ways in which people of African descent, black people here in Germany, experience racism. We are still struggling with stereotypes. We are still addressing issues of blackface. And also, I think it might be important to compare what is going on here with the struggles of indigenous people, Native Americans in the States. So many sports teams continue to use the names of Native Americans as their mascots, going on for many years and continues to this day.
When you look on the debate in Germany, it's often that they compare racism here with the US, especially when it's about language, the N-word, for example. And why, in your opinion, is racism here and in the US not comparable in every way?
Well, I would say it is and is not comparable. Certainly there are similarities, but specific histories draw out specific forms of racism. In the U.S., of course, we have a long history of collective struggle against racism, which goes all the way back to the days of slavery. In a sense, it's kind of remarkable that racism has persisted so long and it refuses to go away. And the fact that it refuses to go away in the United States, even in face of this centuries-long struggle, helps us to understand why it is so powerful in Germany.
Slavery and the connection to colonialism. Can you draw the link between these parts of history, Ms. Davis?
Well, I think it's very important to point out links and continuities between slavery and colonialism. We're talking about a continent that was pilfered and stolen, and people and resources. Slavery was a part of colonialism, you might say. So in a sense, we share a common history that expressed itself in different ways. And so I think it would be really important to establish ties, as Audre Lorde and others have in the past, with current struggles that are going on here in Germany. And let me say that during the last 2 weeks that I've been here, I have learned a great deal, and I, you know, certainly appreciate the care with which activists of African descent, people of color here in Germany, have shared their struggles and their analyses.
So this is the link to you, Ms. Adamu. How does the ISD, for example, I mean, here are many other initiatives, but out of your perspective, how is colonialism seen here in Germany?
I would rather say it's not seen. It's invisible. The colonial violence committed by Germany is not integral part of history books. So mainly it hasn't entered education. So from the beginning, even interested students wouldn't even have the chance to get another perspective on the backside, bad side, if you want so, of colonialism and the imperialism also fostered by Germany. So for example, the history of Namibia, ex-Deutsch-Südwestafrika, is not really explored. And still you would have many objects in museums which haven't been returned. And we need a public debate on that.
Wie wir wissen, gibt es im weltweiten Vergleich verschiedene Rassismen. Als ein europäisches Beispiel ist der gegen Sinti und Roma und der antimuslimische Rassismus zu nennen. In Deutschland sehen wir bis heute Gewalt durch Neonazis, wie im Fall der Terrorgruppe des nationalsozialistischen Untergrundes NSU, der seit fast einem Jahr verhandelt wird. Ein Ort, an dem Menschen mit unterschiedlichen Rassismuserfahrungen zusammenkommen, ist Zusammen e.V.
Beratung und Begleitung, Aufklärung, Bildung und Solidarität. Das sind die Säulen von Zusammen e.V. Der Verein im Frankfurter Stadtteil Rödelheim setzt auf Hilfe zur Selbsthilfe und das Empowerment seiner Mitglieder und der Anwohner. Der Verein ist ein Ort, wo sie sich über ihre Bedürfnisse und Probleme austauschen und sich gegenseitig über die eigenen Rechte schlau machen und damit ein besseres Verständnis für gesellschaftliche Zusammenhänge schaffen. In seiner Arbeit setzt sich der Verein insbesondere gegen institutionellen Rassismus in Behörden, Schulen und auf Ämtern ein und organisierte beispielsweise im Januar eine gemeinsame Busfahrt zur Gedenkdemo für Uri Jalloh in Dessau. Jalloh war am 7. Januar 2005 in einer Zelle der Dessauer Polizeiwache verbrannt, weil dort ein Feuer ausgebrochen war. Die Polizei behauptet, er habe sich selbst angezündet. Nach jahrelanger Verhandlung wurde im vergangenen Jahr dann ein Polizist wegen fahrlässiger Tötung zu einer Geldstrafe von 10.800 Euro verurteilt. Die Nebenklage, welche die Familie Jallows vertritt, forderte jedoch eine Verurteilung wegen Körperverletzung mit Todesfolge und Freiheitsberaubung. Ein kürzlich erschienenes Brandgutachten eines unabhängigen Gutachters kam nun zu dem Ergebnis, dass Jallow sich nicht selbst angezündet haben kann, dass dazu Brandbeschleuniger benutzt worden sein muss. Unterstützer wie Zusammen e.V. fordern daher einen neuen Prozess.
Aytak Barani, you are talking on behalf of Zusammen e.V. How do you experience racism at your work in a meeting point and help desk somehow?
As we experience racism, there are more dimensions. One is experienced by state. Take, for example, the job center, where we had a lot of experiences with anti-Muslim prejudices or racism. People who go there actually because they are needing help are being handled like they are the problem. They are Muslims, they are blacks or Sinti and Roma. There is really a hierarchy of racism too. Like there are the better foreigners and the less better foreigners. And all the prejudices produced by the media are being experienced there. The police and the state are the places, I think, where racism is being experienced by the people themselves a lot. And we in the project see the challenge really to give a good answer among our project with the people that are working there. So,
dieses Statement war die perfekte Überleitung zu unserem nächsten Punkt, Racial Profiling. Die Praxis beschreibt die diskriminierende Verwendung von Zuschreibungen wie beispielsweise ethnische Zugehörigkeit, phänotypische Merkmale oder nationale Herkunft als Grundlage für polizeiliche Identitätskontrollen oder Durchsuchungen ohne konkretes Indiz. Racial Profiling hat viele Gesichter und ist seit vielen Jahren nicht nur ein Problem in Amerika, sondern auch in europäischen Ländern und so auch in Deutschland. Doch die Wahrnehmung in der Öffentlichkeit wächst erst, seitdem der Fall eines jungen schwarzen Mannes bekannt geworden ist, der gegen eine Kontrolle auf der Zugstrecke Koblenz-Frankfurt am Main geklagt hatte. Im Oktober 2012 entschied das Oberverwaltungsgericht Koblenz in zweiter Instanz, dass diese Art der Personenkontrollen nicht mit dem Gleichbehandlungsgesetz vereinbar seien. Aktuell laufen nun zwei weitere Klagen gegen die Bundespolizei. Doch laut der Initiative Christi Schwundeck gibt es weit mehr Vorfälle, die sich tagtäglich ereignen, über die nicht gesprochen wird.
Am 19. Mai 2011 wurde Christi Schwundeck im Jobcenter im Frankfurter Gallusviertel von der Polizei erschossen. Für die Staatsanwaltschaft handelte es sich um Notwehr. Für Kritiker sind die Umstände ihres Todes bis heute nicht aufgeklärt. Mit einem Klageerzwingungsantrag wollten die Angehörigen und die Initiative Christi Schwundeck unabhängige Ermittlungen erreichen, doch das Oberlandesgericht lehnte ihn ab. Nichtsdestotrotz kämpft die Initiative auf politischer Ebene weiter gegen strukturelle Polizeigewalt. Schwundecks Fall versteht sie nicht als Einzelfall, sondern als sichtbaren Ausdruck einer Politik der Ausgrenzung. Der Verein fordert daher auch die Aufklärung anderer Fälle von rassistischer Polizeigewalt, deren Tod nicht aufgeklärt wurde. Es sind die Namen von Mariam De Sa, Dominique Umajo, Uri Jallow und viele weitere. Für den Verein stellen alltägliche Kontrollen und Übergriffe durch eine vermeintliche Sicherheitspolitik viele Menschen unter einen Generalverdacht. Gesetze wie das der Residenzpflicht für geflüchtete Menschen gelten für den Verein als ein Beispiel für eine Form dieser Gewalt.
Ibrahim Danbaki, you are talking on behalf of the Initiative Christi Schwundeck. You and other initiatives say that even if there are many cases of racial profiling, the official speaks of isolated, unfortunate incidents. So you are organizing demonstrations and trying to raise awareness by action. At which point are you with your work today?
At the moment, we are at the point since, like you mentioned, our initiative is based on the murder of Christi Schwundeck, and we try to seek justice. And we realized very early that it was almost impossible. So we took another strategy. Instead of focusing only on the murder of Christi Schwundeck, we will offer a platform for strategies against anti-discrimination and against racial profiling. And we established links and networks to other organizations like the Uri Jallow Initiative. What we are trying to do is to be a voice. Our future goal is still to seek justice for Christi Schwundeck, but on the way there, we take everything else that comes our way till we reach that end. So
what we can say is like that you are fighting the system or being resistant from the outside?
From the outside, and we try to bring awareness to the general public. Like right now, I just came from a demonstration organized by school kids and students. And actually what Sister Jamila said in the beginning about the missing link between the German colonial history and the colonial involvement and the ongoing neocolonialism, all this doesn't appear in the curriculum over here in Germany. So we take all of that to the public. That's what, part of what we do.
So one form to raise awareness is like doing public speaks and demonstrations. And there's also one campaign, it's called Stop Racial Profiling by the ISD. So, and you're trying to connect the different movements, and you also work on a political level. So how far did you come so far?
So far, there have been two petitions launched and initiated by ISD in cooperation with ADEFRA and the Arbeitskreis Panafrikanismus München. So we always work in a network of different organizations. And so we launched two petitions and won the 13th most successful official petition with the German parliament. As one very successful example, last year in October, all the organizations and representatives were present at the hearing in Koblenz, where the decision of another instance was overthrown and racial profiling was officially declared unconstitutional. And we continue with a second wave of campaign, which is called Racial Profiling Costs, in which we would distribute sample letters where people can just register cases of racial profiling, and they are asked to send all these letters to the police to show them that it's not only individual incidents, but it's a structural problem.
So this was one form of racial profiling. In German, we call it verdachtsunabhängige Kontrollen. In US, you call it stop and frisk. So to which extent is the debate comparable to the current debate in the US, Ms. Davis?
Well, I think this debate is definitely comparable. In various large cities, especially in places like New York, the campaign against stop and frisk has achieved a great visibility. I would also like to point out that in connection with the immigrants' rights movement, there is an attempt to counter repressive immigrant legislation that allows the police to stop people who appear as if they might be undocumented. And that's a form of racial profiling. And it means that members of various Latino communities, regardless of their citizenship, regardless of whether they have papers or not, are constantly subject to surveillance and are being stopped and arrested as on the basis of suspicion that they might be undocumented.
Your research and work is on the so-called prison industrial complex, Ms. Davis. The claim is used to attribute the rapid expansion of the U.S. inmate population to the political influence of private prison companies that supply, for example, goods and services to government prison agencies. A response to the prison industrial complex is the so-called prison abolition movement. In your theories, you are also talking about the color of imprisonment. So more than 70% of the imprisoned people are people of color. Also, initiatives in Germany point out the risks for black people or people of color being criminalized by the police. So, Ms. Davis, which strategies do you propose to react and defend yourself against the practice of stop and frisk and other forms of police violence or discrimination?
Well, first of all, it's really important to link campaigns around police violence or campaigns against the stop and frisk strategies of the police. The prison industrial complex relies on racism. It relies on bodies of color. And as a matter of fact, one might argue that structural racism, which is a racism that is not often acknowledged, because it's not based specifically on racial attitudes or racial discrimination or racial utterances. Yet the economic structures, the educational structures are responsible for the fact that overwhelming majority of people who are in prison are people of color. Race certainly matters when it comes to deciding who goes to prison and who doesn't, who gets stopped by the police, who doesn't. And on the other hand, who gets a good education, who gets to go to the university and who doesn't.
Mr. Danbaki, your organization and others are pointing out that in Germany there are also risks for black people or people of color getting criminalized by the police.
Members of the initiative, as well as people of African descent, experienced that, like, immediately after a demonstration for Christy Schwundek, an engineer, Mr. Dereje Vefezip, was attacked by the police and brutalized with his family, and about 3,000 people went out to demonstrate. And that still didn't impress the police, because less than 2 weeks later, one other guy, Munir Bashir, was cited for a ticket. He paid the ticket. So it goes on to show that what we are trying to do is very, very vital, and not just to focus, let's say, on refugee groups, but to focus on all people of African descent, because when it comes to racial profiling, none of us is spared.
Kommen wir zum dritten und letzten Punkt: Flüchtlingspolitik. Jahrelang wurde das Thema in Deutschland gerne verdrängt. Spätestens im vergangenen Jahr hat sich das geändert. Nach den Flüchtlingsdramen vor der Küste von Lampedusa mit mehr als 400 Toten und darauffolgenden Protesten in Städten wie Hamburg, München oder Berlin steht die europäische Flüchtlingspolitik nun auch auf der Agenda der Mainstream-Medien. Eine grundlegende Änderung der viel kritisierten Abschottungspolitik der EU ist trotzdem nicht zu erwarten. Initiativen und Vereine arbeiten schon seit Jahren dafür, mehr Bewusstsein für die Situation von Geflüchteten und deren Leben in der sogenannten Diaspora zu schaffen. Eine dieser Initiativen ist der Verein Afrika Kulturprojekte.
Afrika Kulturprojekte geht aus dem Verein Senegalesische Vereinigung im Land Hessen hervor. Die Namensänderung spiegelt die Veränderung der Aktivitäten des Vereins in den letzten Jahren wider. So versteht er sich nicht mehr nur als Botschafter der senegalesischen Community, sondern als ein Sprachrohr für die gesamte afrikanische Diaspora in Deutschland. Mit seiner Arbeit möchte der Verein einem breit gefassten und panafrikanischen Gedanken Rechnung tragen. Er fungiert als Plattform für politische Debatten, Austausch und der Zusammenarbeit zwischen der schwarzen Diaspora und dem afrikanischen Kontinent. Lesungen, Festivals, Musikevents, Filmvorführungen, Theaterstücke und Kongresse arbeiten die Geschichte und die Verbreitung der Kulturproduktion des afrikanischen Kontinents auf. Seine Aufgabe sieht der Verein auch darin, soziale Kontakte zwischen der Mehrheitsgesellschaft und Menschen afrikanischer Herkunft zu fördern. Sein Ziel ist es, Menschen aufzurufen, sich gesellschaftspolitisch gegen strukturellen Rassismus einzusetzen und ihren Möglichkeiten entsprechend zu engagieren.
Manga Diani, you are talking on behalf of the Association Afrika Kulturprojekte. Organizing on the local level. Did politics change since the media debates and bigger protests? Hat sich die Politik seit der großen Debatten der letzten Monate um Geflüchtete geändert?
No, I don't think so. When we want the condition for our people change, the refugees, we have to be organized. When we are organized, we can change the system. And we try to organize the black people, organize all organizations to want to work with us in this fight.
So, Mr. Danbaki, the example of the tribunal in June, where refugees from all over Germany came together despite various sorts of repression, what do meetings and action like this effect in the case of mobilization and movement?
I think it does a lot. First of all, we have the empowerment aspect. And then, as Manga Diani mentioned earlier, we are also associated and linked. And we believe that through the empowering factor of being able to speak for yourself and to bring charges against this strong and mighty Federal Republic of Germany, you have been empowered in the first place. And we saw how the police and the authorities did everything they could to prevent as many refugees from getting to Berlin, and their resistance and their persistence to still be there to offer their testimonials, I think it was a very, very big success, because that's the first time, not just in Germany, but in Europe, because otherwise refugees, racialized people, used to experience charges against them always in Europe, being illegal immigrants, being economic immigrants and stuff. And for the first time, you have people that are otherwise being accused standing there empowered and being bold and making the connections between the reasons why they have to migrate. And that's where we come back to Pan-Africanism. And we believe that you have to have a strong African continent without exploitation, a liberated African continent. And that's the connection between the diaspora. If we reduce our experiences just to the diaspora, the greater picture is Africa. It's all interlinked and we cannot separate the two. So really, the tribunal was very amazing. And next year, it's on again.
Ms. Davis, during your stay, you were often talking about community work, which is somehow the battery for change or victories. And in one of your lectures, you explained that while you were sitting in jail outside, the movement was getting bigger and bigger. And without that fact, you would not have been here yet. So, Ms. Davis, what does mobilization mean to you today in a changed place where, like you said, also the structure of racism has changed?
I think mobilization continues to be very important, but perhaps even more important than mobilization is organization. You know, oftentimes, we don't recognize the difference between bringing people out to participate in a massive demonstration, which is very important, but we don't understand the distinction between that process and building a movement, an ongoing movement. It is possible to bring a million people out into the street and they go home, and the next day, the next week, it is almost as if nothing has happened. So how do you create that ongoing collective consciousness, that sense of being a part of a permanent community of struggle? And I think that is the work we have to do today.
How does constant organization functions between so many initiatives, Ms. Davis?
Organizing is often that work which is not recognized. It's invisible work. And it's the everyday work of raising political consciousness. You may have, say, 10 members in an organization who are very focused on the work. But if those 10 members do their jobs as organizers, they will be able to motivate thousands of others. And in a sense, when you have a demonstration, that demonstration demonstrates the existence of a movement. It's not the same as the movement, but it is the dramatic evidence of the fact that you have reached thousands and hundreds of thousands of people who are of like mind and like heart and are willing to continue with the struggle against racism, the struggle against war, the struggle against homophobia, the struggle against the prison industrial complex, etc.
So out of your experiences as initiatives, when she's talking, how do you experience it in your work, Ms. Barani?
It's exactly how I feel it is in practice. And it's not like we can mobilize thousands and millions of people. We are far away from that. But I think the work behind the visible action is what we do every day. And we see all the contradictions that you're in. Women getting active who have before never ever thought of doing anything like this. So it's a really hard work, but you need to continue, because my experience is after some time people come back. And the experience of organizing is also a challenge to every individual, because it's your daily life. It's not just one time going to a demonstration, then leaving, and it's being there and being there for the other people, listening to people, and long-time work.
Long-time work. How do you experience it, Mr. Danmaki?
It's really very difficult because it needs a lot of devotion, dedication, a lot of patience too, because it's not easy to mobilize people when it's about some topics that most people don't feel comfortable about. For example, when Christy was shot, it was difficult to mobilize even some people of African descent because they believed if the system acted that way, then the system must be right. So you have the job, the duty of trying to explain to the people that the system hasn't got to always be right. And then even if it seems to be right, the system has to prove itself before its own courts, and they are even refusing to do that. You have these contradictions, so you have the duty of convincing people, no, you have to question the system. And so it's very tiring, but we are here and we are still doing it.
And the initiative for Black people in Germany, how does it function?
In a way, it's intergenerational. So we have different waves of people and activists, and we all build up on the work of those who were before us. I think it's very important to build these links between different movements who are fighting for social justice. So in case one person or even a number of persons have different focuses in their lives, there will be other people taking up the issue and continuing, and therefore this organizing is so important. And I also think it's very important to take care of each other. So you mentioned it, Ms. Davis. I think this topic of self-care for activists is really important.
It's a fact that initiatives who fight against racism in all its aspects have challenges. So, Ms. Davis, your advice, how can activists deal with the frustrations and recurring obstacles?
I've always felt that the process of becoming an activist is largely about commitment to justice that will take you over a long span of time, so that people can be activists in so many different arenas. Oftentimes, the assumption is that in order to be an activist, you have to like long meetings. And, and of course, long meetings can be very boring. But I think that it's important for each individual to ask, what can I do that will further the larger struggle for freedom and justice and equality? And so if I am an artist, how can I use my talents as an artist? If I am a media worker, how can I use my talents as a media worker? I think each person has to be creative and individual in the way in which they carry out their commitment.
To close the arch between theory and practice, how do alliances between different groups with different strategies function? I mean groups which share the same goals but have different working structures. For example, the one is fighting within the official spaces and spheres of politics and the other outside of them. So how to push the collective process of organizing?
Well, I think alliances are extremely important. In the U.S., for example, it is so important to build alliances between Black communities, Black organizations, and Latino communities, and particularly organizations that are working on behalf of undocumented immigrants. Some of the very same forms of racism that were historically used against Black people are now being deployed against undocumented immigrants. And ideologically, Black people are invited to participate in the discrimination against undocumented immigrants. So, you know, how do we create those alliances? It's a major question. It's happening increasingly, I should say. So why can't we see ways in which we bring all of those struggles together?
So I thank you very much for the talk. And maybe you want to quote like your experience of meeting Angela Davis in this 2 weeks, being an activist and being maybe inspired.
For such a long time, an activist, and you have so many experiences. And when I listen to you talking, then it seems like you are talking about what I'm doing. So I think, I hope that this will come together in a point that the whole movement can use all these strengths of activists before us, now and after us, so we can change the system really maybe sometime.
I have a big experience to meet her. When somebody can say, I'm proud to be Black, you know, that means you are resisting. And I see and I learn that you was resisting. And thank you.
This is an inspiration, and I think it's unbelievable. I will believe this when she's gone, but this is such a big honor and never dreamt about this, because this is somebody I've been admiring all of my life. And then to be here in the same room to hug her and to feel the spirit, you know, this is just unbelievable. I just don't know what else to say, but I say thank you very much for being you. Yeah. And thank you very much for the inspiration. Thank you very much.
There's so much developed during our meetings and the time you spent here. And I especially appreciate how intersectional, interdisciplinary, how conscious you draw connections between different topics, bring together different people from different movements, and in a way, by sharing your own experiences, in a way, unite where there could be divisions or perhaps had been divisions. And I think there's a new spirit of thinking and feeling separate categories together. And I thank you so much for being such a great example of not being broken by the violence we often experience. And I think your life has been really a great example of your strength, but also the extent of violence you've been exposed to. And you smile and transform the violence. So thank you very much.
And maybe your last words to the crowd also outside who are listening to this podcast.
Well, it's really been wonderful to spend the last 2 weeks here in Frankfurt. I have not been in Frankfurt for over 40 years, and I didn't know what to expect. And I can say that the meetings that I've had with activists have been so inspiring to me. As a matter of fact, I feel even more empowered to, you know, return to the States and bring the message of struggle that comes from Frankfurt, Germany, to my friends and comrades in Oakland and San Francisco and New York. Thank you so much.